Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. For the millions of Americans still searching for jobs and facing home foreclosures and mounting debt, the Great Recession drags on into its fifth year. But for others, the U.S. economy is looking up. Employers added 227,000 jobs in February, the third consecutive month of gains over 200,000, sending the unemployment rate down to 8.3% from a peak of 10% in October 2009. This morning, NPR began a series of special reports about the renewed optimism in many sectors of the national economy. Today on All Sides, is the national economy really improving, or is this just a quick upswing? And what's the economic outlook for Central Ohio? To get at some of those answers, NPR's Tamara Keith last week interviewed Sean Hendricks. He's the senior vice president of Nissan Chemtech America, Inc. It's a Japanese-owned company located in London, Ohio, and supplies plastic components for Honda vehicles. Nissan Chemtech America has enjoyed an uptick in business. They've been hiring more workers and expanding their physical plant. So Sean Hendricks is with us in the studio today. Welcome to the show, Sean.
Thank you. Good morning.
When we come back after the next segment, Doug Buchanan, the editor of Columbus Business First, and Ron Carter, the business editor of the Columbus Dispatch, will be joining us. So a question for our listeners, what is your impression of the economy? Have you seen improvement in your economic life? Give us a call. Tell us what you think. 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. So, Sean, you were interviewed recently by NPR's Tamara Keith because your company has been hiring more workers.
That's correct. Right now, our total workforce is up to about 380 associates. To give some perspective on that, what I call pre-recession, that is, the recession really actually hit our company in December of 08. Pre-recession, we were at about 242 associates. So even comparing pre-recession December of 08 to today, 380 associates is substantial growth. And then there were a lot of other things that happened there in the middle that also reduced our manpower. Due to the obviously the recession, then the Great Eastern Japan earthquake, and then most recently in November of 2011 was the impact of the Thailand flood. Since that time, we've been recovering.
And something could hit again.
Absolutely.
Two-thirds of the problems have been natural disasters at this point.
Correct.
How was your company affected by the recession since 2008?
What's interesting, Ann, is that in October of 2008, our company had record sales. Okay. Probably about the first week of November after coming off of record sales, I met with our management team and explained to them that I anticipated a storm coming, and that storm being some type of economic downturn. We actually started planning our manpower, reducing our expense budgets, probably about 2 months before it actually started hitting us. We went from 242 associates down to about 200 associates, unfortunately, in a day. And we basically stayed at that level. We also had to reduce work hours. We tried not to lay off any full-time associates, which we achieved that. But we also had associates working anywhere from 24 to 32 hours a week, so everybody took a hit on that. And we as a management team also undertook pay reductions so we could share in some of the pain with our hourly associates.
Oh, my guest is Sean Hendricks. He's a senior vice president of Nissan Chemtech. If you have a question or comment for him, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. In 2008, how do you decide to what extent you need to lay off people and cut back hours and that sort of thing? How do you know how deep the recession is going to hit?
We didn't. What we did is we basically drew up several different scenarios. If our sales reduce 5%, we do this. If our sales reduce 10%, we do this. So on and so forth until we basically looked at what happens if our sales are reduced 25%. We thought that would be a substantial amount. It was actually even greater than that.
So gas prices are set to rise again.
Yes.
And that's pretty much what's dominating the political news right now. To what extent do they help or hurt the economy for you, for car manufacturing, car parts in Ohio? Is that something you figure in?
For us as a parts maker, we're a little bit removed from that directly. That would be our tier one customer that probably has more impact. As a company, we still anticipate us having sales. I think what remains to be seen, the average American's car, I believe I read last week, is about 10.8 years old. So what we anticipate is hopefully car sales will continue, but it may change the type of car someone goes out and purchases. They may be looking to go out and buy a new car, but may, with you know approaching $4 a gallon gas prices, may go out and look for a more economical car to drive.
614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're always hearing about companies fleeing Ohio because of the business climate. Why? How long have you been here and why have you stayed?
Our company started here in London, Ohio in 1988. We started supplying parts in 1989. Our primary customer, Honda, is here. They've been very good to us and our company. And, you know, we have a very good relationship with Honda, and that's why we're staying.
It's all about who your tier one customer is then. It's not about the business climate.
Absolutely.
A year ago, you mentioned the earthquake and then the earthquake and tsunami in Japan. It devastated lots of related industries there. What sort of impact did it have on your business?
Interestingly, the Great Eastern Japan earthquake and the resulting tsunami actually had a greater direct impact on us as far as our sales and our manpower than the initial onslaught of the recession. We actually reduced from 200 associates down to around 160. The impact to us was that at that time, we could not avoid laying off some full-time associates. We laid off, I believe, 22 full-time associates, and we still reduced the hours, the working hours of the rest of the associates as well.
You're a Japanese company?
Yes.
What happened to the company back in Japan? How were they? Any physical impact?
Luckily, based on the location of our plants in Japan, they were not physically impacted. They were also impacted similarly in their sales and so forth.
And then the flooding in Thailand, what was the impact of that? Was that pretty much the same sort of problem?
It was. Fortunately for us and for our primary customer, it was much more short-lived than, unfortunately, the earthquake and tsunami that hit Japan. So our impact was probably about 3 to 4 weeks on the Thailand flood.
When you look at these kinds of problems, and as we mentioned, 2 out of 3 of the problems have been natural disasters. Mm-hmm. To what extent has that made Japanese businesses concerned about concentrating too much of their business in Japan at this point?
That's a good question. To say that they're concentrated in Japan, I don't know if that's entirely accurate these days, whether it's Honda or Toyota or Nissan or these other automotive companies. They pretty much have established over the last 20 or 30 years a pretty significant global footprint. Not everything that you buy, whether it's a Honda or Toyota or Nissan, is produced in Japan or in the U.S., for U.S. consumption, obviously it's produced in the U.S., but they have footprints in Southeast Asia, South America, Europe, so they're pretty widely established.
And how confident is your company, Nissan Chemitec, about the recent upswing in the economy?
Personally, I'm looking to see if it has legs to it.
What do those look like?
I'm not sure. We saw some upticks over the last couple springs, and here we are heading into another spring. Typically, your highest selling months for automobiles typically start about in March, April, and then you'll see some significant sales during the summer months, and then also in December. So I think what's going to be interesting for us as a parts supplier is I think we're going to get a pretty good read once we start heading into May and June if it's going to start having legs.
Because that's when the sales from March will trigger more demand by your biggest customer.
Correct.
After the roller coaster of the last 5 years, even with your preparation at the outset, are there any lessons to be learned about preparing for the changes in the economy? If you could go back and do it differently, what did you learn? How would you, what kind of advice would you give?
Well, we put a lot of planning into it when the recession hit. When the Great Eastern Japan earthquake hit on March 11th, it started impacting us about the last week of March. Actually, I was down in Florida on vacation when it started impacting our company, and I was able to handle everything by email and telephone calls back to our plan as to what to do with manpower, so on and so forth. We had already been there and done that with the recession. We basically followed our same game plan. I think for us and probably a lot of companies, and what we're already experiencing now, is how do you manage growth? Because we have developed a good track record of managing decrease of sales, whether they're man-made or natural. And now the challenge is going to be how well do we react, how well do we plan, how well do we strategize during growth? Because us and many companies haven't had this experience in the last 4 to 5 years.
And it's a different kind of growth
it is.
Than it would have been the last time.
It is.
How is it different?
Our growth is based on two things. One, our primary customer, their sales are picking up. The second part of our growth is we were awarded actually new additional business for a model they produce that we had never had before. So we kind of had the plus one equals two as opposed to just having an increase in production.
Is that why you expanded your plant?
Yes.
How are Americans, workers in the local community as well, responding to the call from employers that they're not properly skilled for the jobs? Do you have enough workers for your job, for the jobs that you have? And are they properly skilled, or you find you're having to train them?
Well, for someone to actually produce a part at a press and assemble and so forth, yes, we can find those people. One of my great concerns in talking to some other business leaders, our greatest concern is finding those people that have some type of an hourly person, but that has some type of hourly technical skill or technical trade. Finding someone that can process on machines, someone that can repair machines, whether it's us or a lot of other suppliers, that's one thing we're really struggling with is more the hourly technical people. They're really hard and few and far between right now.
The president today will rally support for a $1 billion proposal contained in his fiscal 2013 federal budget request before Congress. It's to create a nationwide network of 15 institutes for manufacturing innovation, and they would bring together industry, academic, and government entities and invest in new technologies to help train workers in advanced skills, maybe not necessarily what you were just talking about. But when government talks about things like that, does that sound helpful?
It sounds very helpful. I've traveled to other parts of the world, and I see some countries that are very aggressive in taking the local townspeople, providing them with schooling, and it's technical schooling. I visited one such school, and they had a large axle in there, and they were basically teaching people how to assemble, disassemble an axle. And again, these are people that are coming from the local community. That's a very depressed area. So, yes, that government is doing a very aggressive job of training technical people.
My guest is Sean Hendricks. He's Senior Vice President of Nissan Chemitech. He'll be back with us when we return. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
This is John Donvan. In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, a modest proposal punished violence on the sports field by taking the offender to court. On Tuesday, a new effort to get police officers to hand you their business card anytime they do a stop and frisk. And political junkie Ken Rudin joins us on Wednesday. All of that and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Talk of the Nation this afternoon from 2 until 4 on 89.7 NPR News. Good morning. I'm Amy Jurevich. It's 51 degrees in downtown Columbus with cloudy skies and some light rain. Expect showers and possibly a thunderstorm this afternoon and a high reaching about 61 degrees. A slight chance of showers tonight, a low of 58. There's a chance of rain for Tuesday morning and then some sunshine in the afternoon and a warm day, a high of 71. Clear skies Tuesday night, a low of 47. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
The U.S. economy is bouncing back faster than economists had expected, phenomenon being covered this week in a series of reports by NPR. Is it real? Will it stick? We decided to take a closer look at Central Ohio with two local business journalists. Joining us now is Doug Buchanan. He's the editor of Columbus Business First. Welcome back to the show, Doug.
Morning, Ann.
Also joining us is Ron Carter, the business editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Welcome to the show, Ron.
Thanks, Ann. It's good to be here.
And still with us is Sean Hendricks. He's senior vice president of Nissan Chemitech. If you have a question or comment, join the conversation, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So are you bouncing back from this recession? Listeners, give us a call and tell us your story. And if you're not, that's okay. We want to hear that story, too. In a March 4 report in the Columbus Dispatch, it says that getting an accurate handle on the state of manufacturing can be tough. I think it was a Q&A someone from Channel 10 did or someone from ONN did with someone else. The headline above, however, says that Ohio's manufacturing sector is gaining new strength. So what do we know that inspires that headline, Ron Carter?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that things are picking up, and I think there's a number of reasons for that. You talked about the Japanese production last year and how it was affected by a tsunami. I think that was really underrated in terms of what its impact on the economy, and I think last summer when there started to develop doubts about where the recovery was going, that a lot of that was triggered because the numbers went down related to the tsunami and the fallout from that. Not only did it affect auto, it affected the tech sector. And I think now, I think there's still concern about whether the recovery has really settled in for that same reason, because we saw the dip last year. But I think if you look at some of the underlying factors, car sales, for instance, are now predicted to come in at 14 million cars this year. That's up from a low during the recession of about 10 million. Now it's forecast that within 2 years that'll be back to 16 million. Getting close to what was a normal 17 million. Now, that's a lot of numbers, but what that also says, underlying all of that, is that there will be jobs. There will be people to make autos, and that's very good news in Ohio. So I think there is, and then on other areas, and it was also mentioned about the age of a car on the road, it's very high, almost at a record level. And that also, eventually, people need transportation, they eventually need houses, they eventually need durable goods. And I think there's a tremendous pent-up demand that's still going to make its way into the marketplace.
Doug, what do you have to say about that? I mean, we keep talking about what people's feelings are and the hopes and the expectations, and I'm wondering sometimes how does that all play into the reality of it? Because we're still just human beings. I mean,
Well, I think the other side of what we're talking about is that there has been time now to retool for a lot of these manufacturers. I mean, you had the immense shakeup. It's coming up on, it's more than 3 years ago now. And, you know, manufacturers, they need business. They need to grow. And if whatever they were doing before is no longer there as a market or is no longer working, they've retooled their factories, they've retooled their business models, and they're trying now to get moving again. You know, you've got to figure that after a couple of years of starts and stops that at some point there's enough of this pent-up demand that Ron was talking about that, you know, that they will start to actually see some sustained growth. So you've got to be hopeful about that.
There's talk about a lot of companies, big companies, sitting on a bunch of capital. They're just sitting on it. They're not spending. They're not expanding like Nissan Chematech has. They're just sitting on it. And
right.
Some people say that that's political. They want the, you know, it's, they don't want the economy to do better by spending more and investing in themselves. I was wondering, what do you think about that, Ryan? Doug?
I have a hard time believing that. I mean, you know, the essence of capitalism is to grow your capital. You have to grow. If you're an individual business, an individual salesperson, whether an entrepreneur, a multinational corporation, you are wanting to grow. And if there's an opportunity that you can see out there that you can exploit, you're going to go after it, whatever the political consequences are in 7 months. I mean, it's still an eternity away for them.
Well, I think it all relates to confidence, and it's a confidence that starts at the lowest household level and goes up through the CEO office, that once you and we're kind of knitting that back together, that confidence. You see the numbers month by month. They're a little better. It's a slow rebuild, but the numbers are better. And I think as at the household level, you get confident enough in your job security to spend. That filters all the way up, and companies also have to have the confidence that they can see out a number of months or I should say a number of years, that they have the confidence that this money will be well spent and give them the return they want. And I think that's knitting together, but it's still in the process.
And that impacts hiring as well. I mean, you've seen a dramatic increase in the number of temporary jobs that are out there, part-time workers, and employers are not going to bring them on as full-timers until they are confident that the recovery is going to be sustained enough that they won't have to then lay those people back off. I mean, Sean's example is a good one where their staffing level is kind of ballooning and shrinking depending on the economy. But for a range of businesses, if they are confident enough that this is going to hold, then you're going to see those full-time jobs being added. And, you know, so far this year, it's going pretty well. But both in the spring of 2010, spring of 2011, we saw the job numbers going up only to kind of collapse again going into early summer. So, you know, if you're going to look at the positive side of things, you've got to hope that that's finally going to take hold now and carry us through the rest of 2012.
Sean Hendricks, when you're talking about hiring a couple hundred new people, are those full-time jobs with benefits, that sort of a thing? Or are you talking about the hourly just under 40 hours or just under 30 hours?
No, we don't hire part-time. Right now, our job growth has been honestly with temporary associates. I'm actually having town hall meetings today and Wednesday with 100% of our associates, and I'm explaining to them we actually have full-time positions that we want to hire people for. We know that our sales will sustain at a certain level that we can hire full-time. What we do is then look to evaluate them on what their attendance is, what their quality is, how they're performing. But as I explained to quite a few people this morning before I came here, we're not just bringing people as a temporary associate. We do have full-time jobs. Now, there will be some level or some percentage because of the economy that we will keep as temporary workers, but we're a long way from even getting to that number right now, so we do have full-time jobs available.
My guests are Doug Buchanan. He's editor for Business First. Also, Ron Carter is with us. He's the business editor for the Columbus Dispatch. And you just heard from Sean Hendricks. He's senior vice president of Nissan Chematech. It's in London, Ohio. It's an auto parts supplier. Its primary customer is Honda of North America. 614-292-8513. Or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. How has the economy been treating you lately? Have you gotten a new job recently? Are you one of the people that quit, gave up looking for a job, and then finally went out there and got one? We're going to talk about that right now. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. I wanted to talk about that. When they were talking about the numbers today, or in a recent story, it said, it was a recent Associated Press article, it said that nearly half a million people began looking for work last month, and that most found jobs. The point was that lots of those people had given up on looking for work and came off the sidelines to search for jobs. Is there any sense that that's the case in Central Ohio or Ohio at large, Ron Carter?
I don't know if we have any evidence that goes that separates from the national outlook. But there was an interesting study that was just last week that we've been working on this logic that a lot of people have dropped out of the or given up looking for a job.
So that the numbers don't really reflect.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then there was a study last week that said that this drop in the labor force, which then that drop is what we're talking about.
People who've given up.
Right. Mm-hmm. That a big part of that number might be baby boomers who've retired. So that throws some doubt on the conventional wisdom. But maybe to the bigger point, you know, we talk about the economy improving. It's not a even, you know, situation where, I mean, there's still a lot of people who are either unemployed or underemployed, not making the wage they made at one time. And it's still going to be difficult for those folks. I don't know that we have the kind of recovery. We certainly don't have the kind of recovery going yet that gives all those people jobs, the kind that they certainly would like to attain. Whether we can ramp it up enough in the coming months and years to do it, it's uncertain at this point.
I mean, the latest number I saw, I think it was 24 million under or unemployed, if you count the more expansive number. And getting all of those people back into full-paying jobs, back to the kinds of not just full-paying, but the kind of high-paying jobs that they would have had before, the kinds of jobs that they expect, it's going to take an enormously long time, even though yes, we are adding jobs. We're still only about halfway back from even the jobs that we lost in the recession. You're talking about full time. So you can see very strong job growth for the next 7 months leading up to the election. And the number of people out there who are not satisfied with the job they have is still going to be extraordinarily high.
Sean Hendricks, is when you're hiring people during this hiring uptick for you, it's not necessarily rehiring former employees, or is it? And is the compensation, are you able to pretty much keep things at the pace it was in terms of, you know, richness of income and benefits?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we last May laid off, I believe, 22 full-time associates. Those that wanted to come back are all back with us. So our growth has been with newer associates. We have had a couple of associates that had left for whatever reason over the last couple of years, and they're even coming back. They weren't laid off. They left, you know, for their own reasons. Mm-hmm. They're coming back. But 99.9% of our growth is with new associates that have not worked with us before.
Vince in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Vince.
Thanks, Ann. I thought Sean made a very interesting brief point about how some other nations are doing a better job at training people for high-skill technical jobs that do not require a college education. And I think Germany might be one. And I wonder if in the long term, if the United States and Ohio failure to do this, if in fact we are, is going to hurt us in the long term. And I'll get off the air and listen. Thanks.
Okay. Sean? Ryan.
Yes, absolutely. As a manufacturer and talking to my colleagues that are manufacturers as well in similar positions as mine, that is a chief concern. College isn't for everybody, whether it's academically or financially. I think we really need to look inward as a state and as a country to see what needs to be done to provide technical training to work in manufacturing, whether it's at the high school level or whether it's post-high school level, and what can we do as citizens and in our government to support that activity. I think there has to be a lot of basic change in what we consider trade school and post-high school education.
And this is something for the politicians to really decide. But, I mean, there's a cost-benefit analysis that you can make to investing in those kinds of trade programs by the government, because if you've got long-term unemployed, long-term a big overhang of jobs of people who are out there who are able to work but just don't have the skills to match up, that's going to be a drag on your finance. It's going to be a drag on the economy. So you just have to decide whether you're going to make that investment up front to train those people, to help train them. It may not always work, but the alternative may not be tenable.
Does Ron Carter, does business do a good enough job communicating what they need from the workers that they want to hire?
There seems to be a disconnect. The schools aren't doing the training. They're not doing what needs to be done. And there's often a lot of blame. And, Sean, you're certainly welcome to join in. There's often a lot of blame. Schools aren't teaching what people need to know to get a job. But are employers doing a good enough job reaching out to the schools?
I'm sure there's some who are. It's hard to me, make a blanket statement on that front. I think part of what's gone on is we've had tremendous change over a relatively short period of time, and we have a lot of institutions that don't move as quickly as they need to move, and maybe it's because of size, maybe it's because of historically that's just been the nature of how we do things. But on the training for trades that require technical training, that's a great idea.
I mean, the Ohio Board of Regents is working on this. I mean, they are trying to get all the community colleges, the small private colleges across the state, more to coordinate better this kind of thing. And one example of that you're seeing is with the drilling industry. There's a tremendous number of jobs that are now needed. And obviously, since Ohio has not had a big industry, they don't have an enormous number of people able to do it. And as Governor Kasich famously said, he doesn't want foreigners from other states coming in doing these jobs. So you're starting to see now, especially in eastern Ohio, the community colleges setting up these programs very quickly to get people in there to train them and get them turned around so that they can work in these fields when, as everybody suspects, at least for the next couple of years, this is going to boom.
And that's a good concrete example. But I think one thing we've had that's gone on, too, when you have a global marketplace, labor competes around the world.
Right.
And we've seen cases, and particularly in high-tech jobs, where people have been trained to do something, but then it's, things evolve and the competition is somewhere overseas, and those jobs leave. And so that has to be very discouraging to, be trained in a high-tech field and then be out of work.
You can also train for jobs that can't be outsourced. I mean, there's plumbing jobs. There's a lot of jobs.
No, absolutely. I agree totally.
That you can invest in.
You have to do my plumbing in my house in Columbus, right.
You can't outsource that to a call center somewhere in another country. So, I mean, there are plenty of opportunities as well if you invest wisely in retraining workers. And at the manufacturing plants that you're talking about, I mean, it's going to be very surprising and difficult if Honda or some of their big suppliers were to pick up these plants and move them elsewhere. So, as long as we know the exact kinds of jobs that Nissan and other companies need, you can, tailor those programs for that.
Well, and you see stories all the time where there's worker shortages, whether it's auto mechanics or plumbers,
yeah,
and you're absolutely
doing, yeah.
Right. I mean, we should be training on that level. A lot of training, it seems like, when we talk about retraining, we've had this default position that it's high tech.
Computers. You got to learn upgrade your computer skills.
And I think some people. I was trying to make the point that, and some of these different jobs, people have been kind of whiplashed, but getting to more basic training that's needed is makes perfect sense.
I was curious, Sean Hendricks. I was at an event last week. The room was filled with women in business, and one woman stood up. There was a speaker, and she asked the question. She said she was having a hard time attracting women in the high-tech field. So happens. It's just not particularly the point. But the speaker said, who's not from here, said, well, you are trying to attract them to Columbus. And it was an awkward intake of breath in the room because people here love Columbus. Mm-hmm. I was wondering, from your perspective as someone who's hiring, is it difficult to attract the kind of workers you need, the higher skilled workers, to Central Ohio?
No, we really haven't found that to be true. Even though I don't live in Columbus now, I'm mm-hmm. a Columbus native, love Columbus, and Columbus is an attractive city to live in. When we're hiring for salaried associates, we first look in Central Ohio and try to find salaried associates from within, as we do our hourly associates as well. But salaried associates, we try to hire from within and from within Central Ohio. We really haven't had too much of a problem with that. I did recruit an engineer probably 2 years ago from Minnesota originally, went to school at Michigan Tech, and loves living in Central Ohio.
Any thoughts about that, Doug?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about attracting people maybe from Arizona here, that would be one thing. But if you're talking about attracting people from other parts of Ohio to Columbus, I think that's a much easier sell. I mean, Columbus famously has a large share of its population that is from all the other counties and, you know, and even Cincinnati and Cleveland that are here. Ohio State certainly has a lot to do with that. But, I mean, we're quite frankly, we're a more vibrant city than all the other Ohio cities, and I don't think you need to have a particular amount of swagger, in Mayor Coleman's words, to realize that. And you know, I think that's obvious to most people around Ohio.
We're going to take a break. I want to say goodbye to Sean Hendricks. Thanks so much for joining us today, Sean.
Thank you, Ann.
Sean is Senior Vice President of Nissan Chemitech in London, Ohio, still with us. So when we return, Doug Buchanan of Business First and Ron Carter for the Columbus Dispatch. So stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, drones over America. New legislation recently signed into law by President Obama opens up U.S. airspace to a new era of remote information gathering. John Villasenor tells us what drones can see on Earth. He's a senior fellow at the Brookings Institution and a professor of electrical engineering at UCLA. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today at noon on 89.7 NPR News. Stay right here for All Sides with Ann Fisher, Hour 2 in 20 minutes. It's Put Me In, Coach, Incredible Tales from an OSU Bench Warmer with author Mark Titus. Join us for that discussion from 11 till noon on 89.7 NPR News. And you can receive daily updates from our station by liking WOSU on Facebook or follow WOSU News on Twitter. Another way to connect with us is by subscribing to our Daily News Loop e-newsletter. Just visit WOSU.org/email to sign up. 51 degrees with some light rain. Expect showers off and on throughout the day. Today, maybe a thunderstorm, a high of 61. There's a slight chance of some rain tonight, a low of 58 degrees. Rain for Tuesday morning, some sunshine in the afternoon, and a high of 71 degrees. Sunny for Wednesday, and a high of 75. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Welcome back. We're talking about the economy in Central Ohio and Ohio in general. Has it bounced back as well as it has nationally? And will it stick? My guests, Doug Buchanan, he's managing editor for Business First. Doug, once again, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And also Ron Carter, he's business editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Ron, glad you could be here today.
Good to be here. Thanks, Ann.
We have an email from Vicki in response to my question about to the listeners, whether how you're recovering, what's been your experience in the last few years. If you want to join the conversation, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us, as did Vicki, allsides@wosu.org. And you can go to the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page and post your question or comment there. Vicki writes, where I work, we have increased headcount 5% in the last 2 years, and raises and bonuses are back to what they were before the recession. In 2009, both my daughter and son lost jobs. My daughter had been working a contract job since May 2009, which took her 3 months to get, and lost that job in October 2011, but was able to find permanent work within 6 to 8 weeks. My son took 10 months to find work in 2009, lost his job in October 2011, found a long-term temp job in 6 weeks, and that job is now permanent. So in 2011, they both were able to find new employment much quicker than in 2009, and the jobs are comparable or better than what they had previously. Well, that's a really nice rundown of one family's experience. Does that sound pretty typical?
Well, it's hard to say what's typical in the kind of economy we've been through. Mm-hmm. But I will say we are in a much better place than we were at the height of the financial crisis. That was a terrible period, and things are knitting back together. You can see it in the numbers. Ohio's created 110,000 jobs since the start of 2010. And so people like this caller are going back to work.
And she touched on something that Sean touched on as well. At the height of this, not only were you having job losses, but you were having people cutting back hours, cutting back pay, and scaling back just to try to keep as many people on the payroll as possible. And one thing that you're starting to see now is the number of hours worked per worker has been steadily increasing. And once that reaches a critical number, you have to start hiring again. And I think that we are seeing that number now. And so, not only are the people who are on payroll back now to full pay in many cases to where they were, now you're starting to see that there's so much work going on at these businesses that even with increased productivity that you do need to start adding the jobs. And that's, one reason to give hope that this jobs recovery is going to continue because everybody's maxed out.
An interesting interview with a manufacturer a few months ago said, yes, they wanted to keep as many of their regular employees on as they could, so they thinned the hours and cut back pay and bonuses and that sort of thing. But they said it was also selfish that when the economy does return, they don't want to have to go through the hassle of trying to retrain people, find people. The changeover, they said it can have a kind of a double whammy when you're trying to do that.
Plus, that's very expensive, too.
To hire, to look for people in the whole search process. A couple of things. Drove through the malls. I didn't go into the malls. I wouldn't dare do that on a weekend. But when you drive through, parking lots are packed.
Right.
They're building a new Cabela's at Polaris.
Right.
I mean, it's just there is no stop to the growth, it looks like, at the retail level.
I think, as Sean alluded to, in cars, you take cars as one example. People were driving their junkers for longer, and even late model cars. I mean, after a while, you need to buy a new car, and I think that...
Please don't say that.
Buy a used car. How about that? A newer used car. But it's the same thing throughout retail. Consumers pulled back, and after a while, it goes to confidence, but after a while, you have confidence that you can start to spend again. You can start to put a little bit more into your house again. And as consumers come out of the woodwork, I mean, the retailers who took a beating with everybody else are starting now to refurbish stores, build new stores, because they want to be out in front of that.
They're changing their advertising campaigns. JCPenney is a really good example of just a massive changeover in its advertising.
Right, and Sears is the opposite example. I mean, they're really struggling right now, but that's that's competition in the marketplace. JCPenney thinks that they can be out in front of that and take advantage of the upswing.
And I think there is an uneven recovery going on. I think for quite a while you could have driven around the malls on the north side of Columbus and say, what recession?
Right.
And it's a little more crowded now, but there are some people who haven't felt this downturn like a great majority of people have.
And another thing, we're talking about the return to health, economic health, the incline. And it's going to be slow. That's what everyone keeps saying. It's going to be slow. It's a little bit ahead of pace now than they expected, but it was going to be slow. Was the decline, can we do a little history lesson here about the decline and how slow that was? Or was it very, of course, we had the natural disasters, which affected businesses. But as far as the overall economic decline in the United States, 2008, preceded by the housing
That was sudden.
Bubble.
I mean,
it was the financial meltdown. Yeah, made things decline at a very rapid pace.
Within 6 months, it seemed.
If you look at the GDP numbers, it was sudden. You could compare it to an earthquake and tsunami that just came in and just absolutely whacked the U.S. economy, and everything grounded to a halt. And then, then it's just been fits and starts ever since then. And you just keep hoping that the starts can, you know, gradually come back up a little bit more. I mean, the spring of 2009 was terrible, obviously, immediately after it. Spring of 2010 wasn't good, but it, you know, you saw some signs of progress. Spring of 2011 was a little bit better, wasn't great. And so I think most people are hoping spring of 2012 we're finally going to see the wheels actually continue on and to see this recovery go forward.
Well, you know, the thing about the financial meltdown, it dispersed so much fear into the economy. There were tremendous fears that the reason they put great in front of the recession, it was unlike any recession that anyone who's under 60 years old had ever seen before. And it's hard to disperse that kind of fear. It takes time that we're on the footing. I think there's still concerns about even the credit markets. And I think there's a lot of mystery to the world financial situation. You still have Europe that presents problems and has a negative effect on the psychology in the United States. And it just takes – we're still working our way through that, even though it's been several years now. And that's why I was talking about earlier about the confidence and the confidence – That extends from the household level to the chief executive of a big company. People are starting to get that confidence back, but it's taking a long time.
The housing business, the housing construction business in Central Ohio, as long as I've lived here for 23 years, it's always been a really big deal.
Right.
It declined a great deal, and there's surplus. They don't need to build new houses. There's plenty to go around if you count the foreclosures and the short sales and all of that sort of thing. But that was such a big cornerstone of the economy. So if that doesn't recover, what does that do in the long run?
Well, I mean, it certainly is going to slow things down. I mean, it wasn't – I mean, the weird thing about the – pre-recession economy was it wasn't. I mean, yes, there was a lot of economic activity from the new housing going in, but we had a bubble because there was so much easy money to lend out there that people were taking the equity out of their houses and then turning around and spending it again. It wasn't that they were paying down debt or building up their savings; they were using that for consumption. And if that easy money is no longer there, then you're going to have to find growth elsewhere. So, I mean, even just that one point is going to slow us down somewhat in this recovery, even if all other sectors start really going pretty well.
Thomas, in Youngstown, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Yes, thank you. I was just a short statement about, older people looking for work and how they're complaining that, they need more technical people. And, I've been working in the steel industry for 40 years, and you just can't find it. Nobody wants to hire you, whether it be age, medical issues as far as insurance. And I feel like, we're being kind of shoved out of the way. And, there's a lot of resources that these people like me have. And they're just not putting it to good use, I don't think.
You mean a lot of work experience resources?
Yeah, as far as people looking, companies looking for, good employees. I hear complaints about, everybody needs education and this and that. And there's people out here that can train people on the job. And I feel we're singled out because we're older and insurance is, a big thing now in as far as hospitalization, because they don't want to, insure older people, it seems like. Just my thoughts.
Okay, thanks. Let's hear what Doug Buchanan has to say.
I'm not going to have anything very encouraging to say, because you're talking about two related trends that we're seeing. One is he's absolutely correct. Older workers are not being hired back.
And that tends to be the way it always is.
Correct. And then the other thing is employers have shown a preference when they are hiring for people who are already employed. Unemployed older workers have two strikes against them going in against the rest of the labor force. So that's going to be extremely difficult to overcome. And you have to figure that as the job growth comes and some of those unemployed are getting pulled back in, that older unemployed, especially older long-term unemployed, are probably going to be the last to come back.
Ryan? And,
one of the more controversial stories we did in a while was we did a story on worker shortages in certain fields in central Ohio, because we were hearing these complaints from employers that they weren't able to find the workers they needed. We were flooded with calls and emails from people in central Ohio who said, I have those skills and they won't hire me. I don't know if I still fully know what to make. You know, it's hard to, you can't always draw this empirical picture of what's going on. But it really spoke to the a landscape where there is a lot of angst on both sides, and this caller seems like he's part of it.
What is the deal with hiring people who already have a job? What do we know about that? It seems like if you'd hired somebody who didn't have a job, they'd be harder workers. They would be so much more needy.
Well, I think there's a couple of things. I mean, quite frankly, number one is there's probably a stigma attached to why did you lose your job in the first place?
Even during the Great Recession.
Well, yeah. Sure. I mean, there were 8 million people lost their jobs, but how many millions more kept their jobs? So it's not fair, certainly. But I think for most employers, people who are gainfully employed now are going to be more attractive to them. And the second part of that
is they're just the better.
May not be true,
yeah.
I think that's the attitude. And the second thing is, are your skills up to date? It doesn't take a high tech industries certainly are the major proponent of this, but it can be any number of industries where if you're out of the workforce and out of the loop for any amount of time, there's probably that question in the back of an employer's mind about whether you actually are up to date with all the new trends and in your industry.
Thomas, thanks for your call and good luck. I want to thank my guest today, Ron Carter, business editor for the Columbus Dispatch. Ron, thanks for joining the show.
Thank you, Ann.
And Doug Buchanan, managing editor for Business First. Doug, once again, thanks for joining.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.